Welcome to the Nonfiction Writers, podcasting in a great way from all three sides of the ball. I'm Ryan Aber from high above Owen Field here with fellow OU beat writer Joe Masato and columnist Jenny Carlson.
It's all right. I called Tylan Wallace or Tyron Johnson, one of the two, Tyron Wallace after the game. So who knows? We're all a little bit flustered at this point.
Yeah, it's 10:30 on Saturday night, well after Oklahoma finishes off the 48-47. That was right, 48-47. Bedlam win. A crazy game, guys. But Jenny, we got to start with the two-point conversion there at the end that pretty much decided this game. What do you make of the play, one, on the call on the Oklahoma State side, and two, the play that Oklahoma made after not making very many on that side of the ball all night?
Yeah, you know, I didn't blame Oklahoma State for going for it. You know, I think, you know, if they'd have kicked it, goes to overtime, you know, it's not the worst thing. But Matt Amendola had missed an extra point earlier in the game. His confidence seems to be on shaky ground. So the question of, do you put him out there and have him kick it and miss it? And then people ask, well, you knew his confidence was shaky, why didn't you just go for two? Because you were moving the ball. I think it's probably the thing that, you know, considering the circumstances and all of that, I think that Oklahoma State going for it was right. But they had Taylor Cornelius rolling to his right, which I'm not sure was the best situation for him. He does not throw it great rolling right. So it was maybe not the best play, but Oklahoma did a good job defending it. They got in position to deflect it. And let's remember, they had gone from a 4th and 7 when it looked like they got a stop to a false start penalty that gives Oklahoma State another shot at a 4th and 12 that they not only convert but score on. So Oklahoma's defense could not have been in a great place mentally, and yet they go out there, figure out a way to get that stop. So a lot trending in the, you know, wrong way for the Sooners at that moment, and they figured out a way to get it back in the right and get that two-point conversion stopped.
What about you, Joe? What do you make of that sequence?
Well, as far as whether or not they should have gone for it, when we were on the field, I thought it was the right decision.
All right. Go ahead, Joe.
You're going to interject with your
no,
analysis.
I mean, you know
here.
How I feel, and I'm going to bring it up eventually. But
I'm about to give you the credit before you even have to bring it up yourself, though. So there's 1:03 left, and basically now looking back on it, I think, okay, does OSU have a better chance going for two? And even if they make it, are you really going to stop OU from even getting in field goal range in that final minute and OU potentially winning it with a field goal kicker they trust or even a touchdown? Or, you know, do you go for the tie, try to play some defense, and then, you know, have a better chance in overtime? And I think you can definitely make the case in hindsight that you might have a better chance in overtime, but Dana Holgorsen started all this momentum last week, and Mike Gundy tried to ride it tonight.
Yeah, and Joe, you were on the field with me. You heard me say it. For me, it's not hindsight. I said right from the start that he should have just kicked
right
and played from there, because I didn't think there was any way that Oklahoma State was going to stop Oklahoma in that point from at least getting into field goal range in 1:03. That you take yourself, I thought they would be taking themselves out of a chance to win sort of regardless, especially when, yes, they were moving the ball all over the place offensively, but would you feel better about your defense being on the field at the end or your offense? And I thought their offense, and I just didn't think that that was the right call on Gundy's side. I understand why he made it. I understand why Oklahoma State went for it, but not the way I would have gone.
Yeah, I mean, two things that to justify Gundy's decision-making a little bit. You're the underdog. You don't have much to lose being the underdog. And also, you know, you're the road team, and I think it makes sense as a road underdog to do something like that. I thought it was interesting after the game. I don't know how true it is, but Lincoln Riley said he would have done the same. I don't know if it's just a popular decision now among coaches. But I'd be interested to see if he actually felt that way now looking back at it.
Yeah, although, you know, you say Oklahoma State had nothing to lose, and true, they were the, what was it, 21-point underdog in this game. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're fighting for bowl eligibility. They've got OU this week, and we know how OU can sort of batter and bruise you. You got West Virginia next week. We know what their offense is capable of and what they're capable of, and you leave it to that last game at TCU. And I know TCU has struggled. I know West Virginia hammered them today. I know they've gotten hammered a lot this year. But do you really want to leave it to chance there in that last game? I think you need to do what's best and try to come out with the win. And I called it on the field before it even happened that I thought that was the wrong decision, but I completely understand why Gundy went the way he went.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it I think you can definitely slice it that way for sure, that, you know, there's a good chance Oklahoma still gets in position to score some points if you try to kick it or if you go for it. But I do think that again, I think the biggest problem I had was just the need that it put on Taylor Cornelius to roll out and make that throw, a throw that he's struggled with. There's other throws. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, there's a perfect play for everything in that situation. You're talking about a condensed area. Everybody's within, you know, 10 or 12 yards.
It seems like, and we're sort of getting into Oklahoma State podcast territory here, but I think it's worth talking about that. It seems like that you talk about the condensed field, that what Oklahoma State did there is condense it even more, because they had, you know, 10 players right there bunched up. There was only the one receiver on the field in the play. And, you know, I'm watching it on replay because I wrote the story about this. And I initially thought that there was a receiver sort of off camera on the far side, but there wasn't. You count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah. They're all right there. And you really made it obvious that unless you run the ball, that this is the way you're going to go for Taylor Cornelius. And you sort of put him in a box there. And like you said, you combine that with the fact that he doesn't throw well, moving to that side, just a little bit curious. But on the Oklahoma side, Trey Brown, I know the ball wasn't thrown perfectly. It was thrown low. But Trey Brown covered a lot of ground in just a split second to be able to get in front of that and knock it down.
And let's remember, sort of in the same way that Oklahoma's defense had to be on its heels after giving up the fourth down touchdown, you know, Trey Brown, Trey Norwood, Motley to some degree, but not as much as the Treys, those guys had their struggles today. You know, they ended up a step or two or five behind some receivers a couple times, and it was a struggle out there at times for those guys. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley saying after the game, and Ruff McNeil backing it up, they made a conscious effort that they were going to try to make Oklahoma State one-dimensional, going to try to make them win through the air, not let Justice Hill and Chuba Hubbard beat you with the run game, put it on Taylor Cornelius. Well, lo and behold, he throws for 501 yards. And, you know, I think some of that can be pinned on Oklahoma's defensive secondary that let him get some confidence by letting receivers run wide open. We saw guys open down the sideline. We saw guys open in the middle. So no matter what they were dialing up, he had options that ended up being open, and you just kind of saw him get confident. He didn't make every throw, but I think anytime you have an underdog on the road, you let him score points, you let him stay in there, you let him look up at the scoreboard and see that, you know, it's tighter than they might have thought they were going to be, and that just builds that confidence. So, you know, we saw it last week at Tech, that secondary having trouble keeping guys close and covering well. I mean, it happens all over the Big 12, but that doesn't excuse it. It doesn't make it any better to watch it happen at Oklahoma. And so West Virginia, you brought up, Ryan. I mean, Big 12 title game against whomever, whether it's West Virginia or another team, they're going to have to get some stuff figured out in that secondary.
Yeah, they really are. It's been a struggle really all year, Trey Brown, I think, has been their best defender on the back end overall. But tonight had some really bad moments for him back there. I didn't think that I thought maybe Parnell Motley played the best out of all those guys back there tonight. We didn't see any of those glaring errors. He actually made a couple of plays back there. But Trey Brown and Trey Norwood certainly struggled. Joe, it reminded me a lot of, and I can't remember if you were here. Were you here for the 2014 Baylor game?
I was not. I don't remember it.
Now, I think, Jenny, I know you remember this. I don't think you were here for that. Were you covering that game?
Was that the one that what's-his-name got into it with?
Julian Wilson and Mike Stoops.
Yeah, I was here for that one.
Okay.
I remember it because of that now.
Yeah.
Oh, but, sorry, Julian Wilson. Yeah. I forgot your name. My apologies. It's late, and I forget names.
But, Jenny, a lot of this, what happened on Oklahoma's defense, reminded me of that. Now, Taylor Cornelius wasn't as sharp as Baylor's quarterback that day. Bryce Petty had to look it up to make sure I was getting the right name. Bryce Petty was putting everything, right where he needed it.
Yeah.
But you talk about the way that there was sort of an inevitability to what was going on, and that felt a lot like that tonight at times.
Yeah, I thought that Baylor game, if they got into a rhythm that it was 11 yards, 13 yards, out, to the boundary, to the other boundary, up, and that became like, it was stunning it was the pitch and catch nature of that. So this was a little bit different, but I think what you say is at the heart right, Ryan. I don't know if I thought that Tylan Wallace would go and score a touchdown on that 4th and 12 there at the end, but I don't necessarily know that I thought that they weren't going to convert that.
Yeah.
If you're Oklahoma's defense, that has to be concerning. That there's just that feeling like teams are moving the ball regardless.
Yeah. And there were a couple times, Joe, though, where they came up and played press coverage, and had a little bit of success with it at certain times. I know you don't want to do it all the time because you're worried about getting beat deep, and certainly with the receivers that Oklahoma State throws out there, that's a concern. But at the same time, when you're not having any success the other way, they dink and dunk you. And I know it's the thought among a lot of coaches is, give yourselves another chance to make a play. But I thought, there were times they did go press with some positive results.
Yeah, there were times in the third quarter the defense started to play a little bit better. And like you said, they pressed up a little bit. But it's just a matter of, they're getting beat so bad in the first place that it really doesn't matter what you do if the end result is going to be more yards for the other team. And I just thought about this today as far as, on Twitter, everyone's, making jokes about, this is why they fired Mike Stoops and stuff. And, Ruffin McNeil definitely had a grace period with his first two games being against TCU and Kansas State. Neither team can pass the ball at all. And then you see what happens against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, and it's sort of more of the same from what we saw earlier in the season, that this pass defense just really, really struggles, and that the way to beat OU is through the air. And even when, Taylor Cornelius, I thought he was really impressive. I know he missed a few throws. I know there was a few drops. But overall, OU made OSU's offense look great when they were out without Justice Hill for much of the game.
Yeah, Jenny, I thought this was interesting talking to Curtis Bolton after the game, and I use this in my game story. We talk about what's wrong with Oklahoma's defense and, how you try to fix that or at least put a Band-Aid on it. But right now they're just not doing much of anything well. And, yes, their offense is bailing them out. Yes, they've gotten some big plays at the end the last couple weeks, obviously the two-point conversion plays. The two down in Lubbock last week, the one here tonight. But this is what Curtis Bolton said. We've got to play better on the deep balls. We can't get lulled to sleep on the back end. And the linebackers, we've got to get better underneath coverage. As good as we play in the run game, we've got to get more pressure on the quarterback. We can't let them sit back there for 6-7 seconds and expect our DBs to sit in coverage for that long. I think we play well in the run game, but at the end of the day, I think we need a better pass rush on obvious pass rush downs. Our linebackers need to sink more, and our back end needs to lock in and not give up fade and post balls. So basically he said, outside of run defense, which, I mean, they gave up a fair amount of rushing yards tonight. I mean, even with Justice Hill out, Chuba Hubbard still rushes for over 104 yards. They only finished with 139. Not awful, but, I mean, Curtis Bolton sort of laid out everything pretty much right there.
Yeah, and, you know, I was looking at the defensive stats here, and Kenneth Murray, middle linebacker, leads the team with 11 tackles. Bolton's got 8, including 1.5 for loss. And then Caleb Kelly, who played kind of a surprise role today, had 7, which would tie for 3rd. So they got some tackle numbers out of those linebackers, but yet, you know, when you think about the linebackers affecting the game, you know, really making plays that stand out in your mind, like there's not a ton that I'm thinking in my head, oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, the only one that comes to my mind is Bolton's tackle for a loss. I'm trying to think. He teamed up with somebody. Maybe it was Kenneth Mann for that. But really outside of that, there weren't a whole lot of plays where you go, hey, that's a hell of a play by a linebacker.
Yeah, and it's not the be-all, end-all, obviously, when you're talking about great defense. But, you know, I think that's when you talk about guys that can really, you know, swing the defense one way or another. We saw this, you know, last year being an issue that, you know, they just didn't have those guys making game-changing plays at linebacker. I think they're getting pretty decent production and, you know, output out of their defensive line. You know, you see those guys, they're not gonna make a gazillion plays, but they're doing decent. But the linebackers just, it doesn't feel like they're just impacting the game like I think they could.
Yeah, I think one of the things is, yes, they're making a lot of plays, but these plays that they're making are really from their position. They're not coming up and getting in the backfield and being disruptive. They're not coming up and making those plays at the line of scrimmage even. It's, you know, 3 and 4 yards downfield.
Players coming at them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, somebody's got to make those tackles or they go, you know, for a touchdown the other way. So that's why Kenneth Murray and Curtis Bolton wind up racking up. Now, I still think that Curtis Bolton has been, and don't laugh, Joe, I still think Curtis Bolton has been their best defender overall.
He has been.
This year. The amount of plays he's made, but they really need, well, they need better play all around, but they could really use those linebackers to be impactful in a way that they haven't been of late, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely right, and maybe, you know, the test gets quite a bit easier next week, but you know, maybe they can see it as, okay, you've got, you know, a week before you go out and play West Virginia, because at this point, I mean, they might have to score 70 in that game because, you know, it's just this offense is just carrying this team so much. And even in, you know, the one loss, you score 45 points and still lose. And Kyler Murray was asked about that after the game and said it wasn't something he thought about. But it's hard for me to believe that Kyler Murray is not thinking how much he has to score.
Does anybody believe that?
Well,
show of hands here.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, before you brought that up, Joe, when I was listening to Kyler after the game, I was going to ask you guys, did you sense him parsing words, measuring words?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You could see the gears turning.
Right. He leaned forward at the podium a little bit and, you know, didn't know. It seemed like he didn't know how to phrase his answer.
He's like,
because he knew it might be.
How can I say this?
Yeah.
And
I think he was
make the people who I'm about to go to the locker room and see mad.
Yeah. Really big and much bigger than he is. I think he was asked, you know, a question along the lines of, you know, there's this national narrative out there when you talk about playoff teams. Does Oklahoma have a defense good enough to really be considered a playoff team? You know, you can argue a lot of different points in that, but he was asked something along those lines. And, you know, obviously defense isn't his thing, but, you know, if you're Kyler Murray or the offense, there has to be a sense of pressure. I mean, in the same way I think Oklahoma State's offense felt pressure tonight. You know, they knew there was a feeling of this is, you know, whoever maximizes the offensive possessions is going to win this game. And so that seems to be the theme every time Oklahoma plays somebody really good, and or not even really good, yeah, just marginally good. And, you know, because I've been in the house to see Oklahoma State, you know, struggle to score against Kansas State. I saw them struggle to score against Baylor at the end last week. I mean, I've seen them struggle offensively against teams overall that aren't nearly as good as Oklahoma. And yet, sort of in the same way, you know, you were talking earlier, Ryan, there's this inevitability of, you know, what an opponent that can actually pass the ball is going to do on this defense.
Yeah, it really is. And like Joe said, I don't think there's any thought that Oklahoma's going to find a way here in 2 weeks to slow down Will Grier in West Virginia. A couple weeks ago, I thought maybe given one some of the improvement, and I still think, as bad as this was tonight, I still think you saw improvement from what Oklahoma was defensively early in the season. You know, there wasn't a ton of missed tackles. There were some. So it wasn't just the sort of jailbreak that we saw, I think, certainly in that Texas game. And some against Iowa State. But, you know, with West Virginia struggling how they did offensively, you know, a few weeks ago, you thought, well, maybe that game's not as crazy as you would think. But after what West Virginia did today, I don't think there's any doubt their offense is clicking along pretty good, and they're going to have to score a lot of points here in 2 weeks.
And to go along the lines of that, as far as, you know, maybe even as bad as it was today, it hasn't been as bad as – it has been even earlier this season. Lincoln Riley talked about the mentality of the defense, and I know, you know, coaches can always throw that out, but like there really does seem to be a sense that when we talk to the defensive players that they have been, I don't know if happier is the right word, but they seem more into things since the defensive coordinator changed. They seem to love playing for Ruffin McNeil, and that's not always translating to better numbers, but they do seem to at least be in a better mental space.
You know, something I was thinking about too, and I wrote about the run game tonight, and, you know, it's obviously not the defense directly, but I do think the way that Oklahoma is able to run the ball, we saw them again have a pair of 100-yard rushers for the second consecutive week. Last week, it was Sermon and Murray. This week, it was Kennedy Brooks and Sermon. Really impressive yardage, 11.5, I think, for Kennedy Brooks per carry. I mean, that's ridiculous. 7.5 as a team overall. Again, if you get to 5, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
I mean, but the thing that strikes me about that as it relates to defense is if they can figure out a way to use that to their advantage to shorten games a little bit, give their defense a little bit. I mean, they maybe didn't shorten it tonight. Like, they actually got a really big run from Kennedy Brooks that he nearly scored on, and it really made for a quick possession there to give him the go-ahead touchdown. But, you know, normally if you're chewing up 6, 8, 12 yards, you know, you can run a little more clock and give your defense a little bit of a break there. Maybe that is something that, you know, considering the way that run game has gotten going and, you know, shows no signs of slowing down, even as they've lost guys to injury and the depth has continued to drop, they just keep running the ball so well. Like, could that be a potential helpmate, at least, to that Oklahoma defense?
Yeah, I think it's something that Lincoln Riley has to consider. And I know he talks about, you know, just wanting to score and not worrying too much about anything else. But at the same time, when you're able to grind out drives like that, when you've got the ability, because we know they've got the ability, it's a question of tempo. Do you slow it down and take your time and, you know, pace yourself a little bit, or do you just go, 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 go? We know their offense can be successful doing that, but, you know, maybe that's the thing, is just give your defense every little bit of help that you can. And right now, with the way they're running it with both those guys, all three of them, you throw Kyler Murray in there, I don't think there's any doubt in the way the offensive line is blocking. They were fantastic yet again, that there's no doubt that they could do it. The question is, will they do it?
Yeah, it makes sense, and I think they should definitely consider. It's just got to be a really tough ask for Lincoln Riley, an offensive mind, to ask Kyler Murray to slow it down a little bit. And for that offense, like, I don't know, to sort of diminish maybe the strongest part of this team, and maybe, like, surely they don't feel comfortable winning 48-47, but maybe that's just the way this team has to win. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll find out in 2 weeks. I don't think we're we're going to learn too much next week. It'll give the Riley brothers a chance to reconnect. That's about it.
One of the last times that Kansas came in here, we know what happened with Samaje Perine and the single game rushing record in the NCAA. I don't, because Oklahoma has two really good backs right now, I'm not sure we're going to see one guy with a record that approaches anything like that, but that was, I was there that day, and let me tell you, that was like a gift from heaven, because when you have a mismatch like that, you're praying
for
that
something give happens. Us something to write about, something to talk about, something to,
and then
feature,
boom. It's like a lightning strike. Yeah. I think it actually rained that day. Maybe I'm thinking of
it. Did no,
I,
it did.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking of all these.
Absolutely not wrong,
because
it was
the sky.
It was raining. I remember being on the field at the end of that game. I will say, I think Kansas's defense now is much better than that defense that the Jayhawks rolled out on the field that day. They had zero will to stop Samaje Perine that day. I've never seen a defense just absolutely roll over like Kansas did in that game.
That was terrible. Can I just make a quick aside?
Of course.
As Kansas is searching for its next coach, how much fun...
Jayhawks alum, Jenny Carlson.
This is not a plea as a former Kansas person. This is a plea for great quotes and storylines.
Jenny's going to make
There's no doubt. Les Miles, come back to the Big 12. I'm telling you, their defense, like you say, Ryan, it's not great, but
they got some players over there at least.
And you know what? To me, Miles is. Why are we talking about this? Is self-inflicted. Sorry, I did this to the podcast.
Why are we talking about Miles? I brought it up.
Okay, I was gonna say Kansas, but I was like, oh wait, no, that brought this up. They were at their best recently under Mark Mangino, the former Oklahoma assistant, who really focused on, you know, the toughness aspect of it, not working on not beating yourself. I'm not sure Les Miles' teams have been in the not beating yourself category all that often, but he definitely is a guy that wants his teams to be physical and tough. I just think it'd be – they're not going to turn it around in the way that Oklahoma has it rolling, or, you know, Oklahoma State has, or Texas looks like they're going to eventually. But, gosh, it'd be fun to see what he could do. It'd be fun.
Yeah. I'm all for it.
I'm with you. Although I was
three
talking,
votes for Les Miles.
I was talking to Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated earlier.
Don't crush my dream.
And he was talking about, will Les's offense really fly now? I mean, can you really hope to build anything with that offense? And, I mean, unless he's willing to completely go a different way, and that's going a different way either way. You could say, okay, we're going to try to do what every other team in the Big 12 does.
Or we're going to try to do the triple option.
Yeah. Do something different.
Did you see something about that?
No.
As well?
I didn't. I saw
Jeff Monken at Army, his name being brought up for the job. Like, why not, if you're Kansas, do something crazy like that? You're seeing the success that Army had and that Army had against OU. Like, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not, because you give teams something that they're, especially in this league, that they're never going to have to prepare for, except for that 1 week. We saw how Army made it really difficult on Oklahoma to slow down. If you're a program like Kansas that's teeters, I mean, you know, the service academies have made that sort of a leveling
tool. Georgia Tech's always been solid for the most part.
Georgia Tech's been solid, I think, until recently.
Well, and remember, too, a lot of these teams that run the triple option are schools that, you know, the service academies have standards of, you know, entrance. You're talking Virginia Tech's very high level school when it comes to grades and, you know, all that
Georgia
stuff.
Tech.
What did I say?
Virginia Tech.
Oh, well, them too, to some degree, but yeah. They're struggling, but we don't need to talk about the Hokies.
But Justin Fuente isn't a proprietor of the triple option. No.
He might need to be after the way this season's going for him. But no, what I was going to say is, and in some ways, they run that out of a necessity because they're not going to out-athlete you.
Yeah.
You know, and Kansas, they don't have the barriers to admissions that the surface academies would. They're just like everybody else in the Big 12 for the most part. They're going to be able to get better athletes, but if they would run that with better athletes, ooh, that'd be really interesting.
It'd be nothing but fun to watch, it'd be nothing but fun to cover.
It'd be better than the drivel I'm afraid we're going to see next Saturday.
And I'm pretty sure we're just combining two podcasts into one.
We've started with OU OSU coverage, and now we've solved Kansas's program problems.
Where's
our money from Jeff Long?
Yeah,
we're just taking circles here.
You know how they hire those consulting firms for coaching searches? This is where it starts.
Us, the three of us, the nonfiction writers, consulting firm.
Abram Masato and Carlson. We're
good.
Here for you. 475-3314.
Please send the check as soon as possible. Yeah. Christmas time's almost here. Let's get back to tonight, though, because, Jenny, we talked about the running game, but we've gotten to this point, and the only mention of Kyler Murray. Yeah. We're here 30 minutes into this thing.
Woo.
And the only mention of Kyler Murray so far has been his quote about the defense and the way he sort of sidestepped around things, tiptoed through things, evaded.
Did he evade that question better than he evaded defenders?
It's a good question. So tonight, Kyler Murray, 66 yards rushing, actually was up, I think, about 75, had a late sack that was a big one that took him out of it. I was talking to Joe that there was a chance we could have OU with 300-yard rushers there before that, really. But 21 of 29, 349 yards, just one touchdown. The three-touchdown streak comes to an end. But it's funny. 21 of 29, 349, a touchdown, no interceptions, rushed for 66. And it was just sort of, it was a
nice
decent
night.
Game.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, can you believe that?
Yeah.
But that's just sort of where we are with Kyler Murray right now.
Yeah, no. And I thought, I did a short on him in our report card, which you can check out online at newsok.com, or if you're a subscriber, it'll be in your Oklahoma tomorrow. I did a short thing on him, and I thought as impressive as anything was the fact that what we were talking about before, what has to be frustrating and, you know, nerve-wracking, knowing that you got to go out and score, and the frustration of that, you didn't sense it from him. There was never a time when he seemed rattled or hurried. We saw the two early turnover interceptions last week at Texas Tech. No sign of that at all. No turnovers, no interceptions. Did not press, just really stayed within the parameters of what he needed to do. It's a trend we've seen throughout the season, but as the pressures turned up, rivalry game, end of the year, push to the playoff, you know, you never know. And he stayed as cool as we've seen him all year. I thought a really, really great performance from him tonight.
Yeah, I thought so too. And Joe, to Jenny's point about the way that he composes himself, you know, obviously Baker Mayfield's personality was so much part of this team the last couple of years and was sort of their identity. But it seems like their identity now is just sort of that business-like mentality that Kyler Murray has that, yes, I mean, both of them can be effective. Heck, we've seen both of them can be wildly effective, but they don't get rattled. They don't they just sort of stay within themselves and generally have taken on the excuse me, I can hardly talk right now.
Got choked up.
Taking on the personality of Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he's not strayed from that at all this season. Even his, you know, when we first started talking to him at the beginning of the year, his interviews, he's been this guy ever since. I mean, from the day he was announced as the starting quarterback, that first press conference, I think, is how he acted tonight. It's just who Kyler Murray is. He doesn't really break out of that shell, and maybe it's not even a shell. Maybe it's just who he is. I mean, a lot of guys have talked that, you know, he's not Baker Mayfield even away from us or off the field or anything like that. And I think they really do feel a sense of comfort, you know, around that. And I think, you know, he kind of matches that personality of Lincoln Riley in a way. And I think just as Baker and Lincoln Riley meshed in a totally different way, maybe, I think you're seeing Riley and Murray mesh.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to like about Kyler Murray. But, you know, the thing I wasn't sure of was every quarterback is going to be a leader. You know, there's no two ways around that when you're in that position. But I just didn't know. I mean, this is a guy that has played baseball. He's not been around as much as some other quarterbacks, you know, not at every spring practice this last year, the year before. You know, you just don't know. Like, how's that going to be? And then he gets the big signing bonus. You know, how's this all going to play out? And you can definitely sense that these guys – are in that mode of what Kyler Murray is bringing to the team. And so that's been interesting to see that shift, as you said, Joe, between that fire of Mayfield now to the calm of Murray.
Keeping with Kyler Murray, and I've gotten some water here so I can actually talk a little bit. But keeping to Kyler Murray, Jenny, this is something that Joe and I were talking about throughout the game, and we've talked about it a couple other times throughout the last few weeks. So much attention has been given to Kyler Murray's ability to slide. Talk about it in relation to his baseball career and how that helps. But the slide in baseball and what Kyler Murray does out there with his slides is completely different. He seems to be able to, one, sense pressure, and two, get down really quickly where he's not exposing himself to a lot of those big hits that sometimes you see at the very end of slides, things like that. He can get down quickly, get out of it, and really limit the chance of injury. And we saw it again today on several occasions. I think there was one, and I think, Joe, it was the play that we were talking about, where he goes down and sort of in the middle of about four Oklahoma State defenders, and he's on his back like that, and really no chance for them to make any kind of a play.
Yeah, he's got the regular slide that more closely resembles the baseball slide, but then he's got this thing where he's just running full speed, and then he almost just like falls on his back, like right in front of a defensive player, and it's something you don't often see, but I don't know. Maybe it's Billy Bean calling him every week saying, make sure you get down, make sure you get down.
It's like he's got a little gymnastics in him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. it's not just baseball. It's not just football. It's almost like there's this other thing in him. Because right at the end of the first half, we saw him run and pop up immediately after he slid and try to call a timeout. Didn't quite work. But, like, just the quickness of it all. The run, the get down, the get up. It was like, ugh. But yeah, just the speed that he moves out there.
Well, it's funny that he really thought that he could make that run, slide, get up, call a timeout on 5 seconds.
He almost did.
And he almost did. Yeah. It was incredible. Joe, what do you think Scott Boras thought about today's performance?
Hopefully you read in our story about that. I mean, it's really interesting. Scott Boras says, you know, he was standing up during the Texas game. He said he watches every second of every OU game. So it's really, really interesting for he admitted that he knows nothing about football, but he said he watches Kyler Murray every game. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It seems by the week there seems to be this growing talk that maybe his football career isn't over. I think it's definitely going to be over at OU, but whether or not a team might take a chance on him in the NFL. So, I don't know. Hopefully we continue to follow that story and figure it out as Kyler Murray figures it out.
I wonder what Scott Boras thought of Kyler Murray's outfit after the game.
I want to know what anyone thinks about it.
I feel like this might be the good, like, this has got to be like every end moment of the, you know, Nonfiction Writers Podcast has got to be like a quick breakdown
of Kyler Murray's fashion choices.
And then that's like, we're out.
Here's my thought, and I actually brought this up to Joe the other day right after he got off the phone with Scott Boras. You think about whether Kyler Murray's going to play baseball or what he's going to do. I mean, the amount of money that he's spending on clothes.
Yeah.
He better play baseball.
Sort of means he's sort of locked in because the A's aren't going to just give him that money. They're going to want it back if he makes a different choice.
Do we need to describe? I'm not sure I can accurately describe everything that was happening in his outfit. So let's start.
What color was the cut jacket? It was
pink.
I call it pink.
Yeah.
Definitely pink.
It was very light pink.
It looked like.
Like a pastel.
Grease.
Yeah, like except that, very, like a muted.
It was a little toned down.
It was a letter jacket, although not from any school I've ever seen.
Like a satin jacket.
And it wasn't leather at all. I mean, it was satin.
But it had on the back, it had Fear of God and like a nameplate. I thought it might be Fear Me. When he first walked in, I could only see the fear, so I didn't know what it was until the end. And then he was wearing black pants with a white, like,
they're sort of like tuxedos. They look like track pants, sort of. But
a white stripe up the side. And did he have rips in them too? I think there were rips in them.
I don't know. I didn't see that.
And then shoes from Nike.
Yeah.
That had this writing on them that said something about Nike and Oregon. Like they were supposed to be like some sort
so
of
like the origin of Nike.
Yeah,
right.
It said like Beaverton, Oregon, I think is what they said.
And he had some sort of, it almost looked like the thing that you should cut off when you get new shoes. Yeah. Did you see that, Joe?
Yeah, I think he's actually worn those before, but they look fresh out of the box. High top white Nikes. I don't know.
Jenny, I think we need this project. I think at the end of the year, you need to rank Kyler Murray's postgame attire.
That'd be good.
I'm for it. Totally for it.
Yeah.
I would have to think really hard because I haven't been here for obviously. I might be OU, might be OSU, depending. But so I'll need some help with some photos or some video. But it's all out there. I can totally do that. The Lion shirt seems to be a high.
Yeah.
Although the one with the sunglasses on it.
That was a good one.
That was early in the year because it was still hot and. Yeah.
He said he bought it in California, so. Yeah. It looked like he did.
I mean, tonight was kind of on the avant-garde.
Muted.
Yeah, it was interesting. That's okay. Sign me up. I'm good.
Okay, so one other football topic I want to cover before we wrap this up. Marquise Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, big numbers. Eight catches, 142 yards, a touchdown, had the 51-yard touchdown that was sort of vintage Marquise Brown. But it still seems like he's not quite at 100%. There was a couple plays where you're like, oh, early in the year that would have been a touchdown, where he stopped, after 15 yards down the field. It seems like he's getting better, getting closer to that, but I think for him to put up the kind of numbers he did tonight without being 100% is pretty incredible.
Yeah. When I talked to him after the game, I asked him about that. And he said, he's definitely, this is the best he's felt. He said it was a little better than last week, which was a little better the week before. But he sprained his left ankle at TCU and really hasn't been the same since. And for a guy whose game is so reliant on speed, it's got to be frustrating for him not to. He said he's still fast enough, so which he proved today, I guess. But you can tell he doesn't cut the same. He doesn't quite have that same speed as he did before. But the play I really focused on when writing about him today was the 3rd and 11 late in the third quarter, when basically he caught a crossing route from Kyler Murray. There were still about 7 yards to go for the first down, and he just split two Oklahoma State defenders. And then that was kind of like, oh, Marquise Brown is back. And Lincoln Riley talked about that play after the game, that you know, Kyler made the right read there, but then it's all guys have to make plays, and that was him making a play.
Well, and remember, too, he had a couple catches early in the game when he seemed very hesitant to cut up field.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was sort of drifting out, waiting for the moment when he felt like he there was a hole or an opportunity.
And generally, most of the season that's been there because he'll get to the edge and just take off because
Jets.
Nobody's there.
Yeah.
But now I think that's where you see that he's not quite there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you sensed that. I think that makes that play that Joe referenced stand out even more, because plays earlier in the game when maybe there wasn't that must get yardage feeling, he wasn't necessarily hitting it like he hit that one. And, you know, that was a moment when they needed those yards, and he figured out a way to find the speed and the space to make it happen after not necessarily having that be the case earlier in the game all the time.
Yeah. Up until that point, I mean, they hadn't scored in the third quarter, and then he had that long catch two plays later, and then basically, that I thought that got the offense going again in the third quarter and then in the second half, and just a really important play in the game.
All right, so we're going to wrap it up there. I'm sure the fine press box workers up here are ready to get home. We are ready to get home. It's 11:15. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for reading our stuff. And you can check out our work every day at newsok.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best. We coverage anywhere.